Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Sophos podcast. I'm Paul Ducklin from Sophos in Sydney, and I'm joined today by Rob Forsyth, who's Managing Director of Sophos in Asia Pacific.
Thanks very much, Paul, and good afternoon to you.
I ought to mention also that Rob is Deputy Chairman of the Internet Industry Association of Australia, and he's one of the board members of the Internet Society of Australia, so he's the ideal guy to talk to us on today's topic, which is ISPs, governments, and cybercrime. How do they all fit together? So let's start, Rob, by looking at the recent court case which just concluded of AINet versus the Australian film industry, or perhaps the other way around, since the film industry sued one of Australia's ISPs. Do you want to tell us what that was all about?
Yes, a very interesting case and the first one of its type in the world. 34 applicants got together in a group called AFACT, Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, and they had a shot at Australia's third largest ISP. And they were trying to persuade the court that a crime had been committed with the assistance of AINet and copyright theft.
Now, my understanding, Rob, is that AINet didn't say this is absolutely nothing to do with us and we don't care. The impression I get is that they rather resented the idea that they should actually be judge, jury, and executioner on the say-so of the movie industry. In other words, they felt that the fact that they were providing their customers an internet access service, and if some of their customers chose to use software which made it easy for them to commit piracy, whilst AINet would deal with that, they weren't just going blindly to cut them off. Is that a reasonable
Yeah, that's probably pretty good, Paul. The AINet did have a policy to discourage people to steal copyrighted material, but they didn't actually have a policy which suited AFACT. So AFACT were trying to have a much tougher policy installed.
And if I read at least the summary of the judgment correctly, it seems that the judge agreed very strongly with AINet and said that the movie guys had sued the wrong people.
Yep, absolutely. Although he did find that there had been copyright theft, so a crime had been committed, he just found that the court case between these two particular groups were the wrong people were being charged.
Implicit in that, whom should the movie industry have sued in this case?
The individual copyright thieves.
So why didn't the movie industry just go after the top infringers? Surely they, if they know who they are, so they can tell AINet, they must be able to find out a few names and go after those, at least to make an example of them.
Well, the only names they were sure of were the people they'd employed to go and steal the copyrighted material.
Couldn't they have sued them?
They probably could have
saved a lot of money.
No, the difficulty with that is, first of all, getting AINet to provide that information to them of who these alleged thieves were, and secondly, actions against individuals are unpopular, expensive, and sometimes not going to deliver the result that the AFACT group would have wanted.
So some observers are saying that this has kind of amounted to an invitation to people to carry on with piracy. Do you agree with that assessment?
No, I don't really believe it's an invitation. I think the judge clearly acknowledged that stealing copyrighted material on the internet is a breach of the law, and was encouraging, I think, the copyright owners to pursue them. So I don't see it as an invitation to take copyrighted material, no.
Surely there's a better way for other people are saying, well, what we need to do is, you know, we'll keep hammering away at this in lawsuits until the government steps in and changes the law. Now, don't we already have, for example, through Apple's iTunes store, a good model whereby everybody can benefit? People can download music, they get it at a reasonable price, that the artists are happy, the industry is happy, Apple are happy. Surely that sort of model could be pursued by the movie industry and the music industry in Australia, instead of resorting to the courtroom to try and sort this out.
I think it's absolutely self-evident that we'll find some way forward similar to the Apple Store model. There's a third arm to that as well, and that's education, ensuring that what have been referred to as leeches, people who are stealing this copyrighted material, are educated that this is not the appropriate behaviour for the internet, and as new models emerge, they should embrace those.
Okay, enough about what's happened on the piracy front. Let's focus on some more of the pump that the Australian government's been under recently. You've probably heard of an attack rather rudely called Titstorm, which is a bunch of anonymous people, quite literally and figuratively, from around the world who decided they're so ill-disposed towards the Australian government proposing to, you know, block porn and the like on the internet in some limited fashion that in order to protest this that they bombarded government websites with a distributed denial of service attack of sorts. And from what I gather, they also bombarded parliamentarians and legislators with spam containing pornographic images. Doesn't seem a good way to whip up support for an anti-filtering argument.
No, it wouldn't seem a very good move by a group like that. In fact, they're probably going to rile the very people that they wish to convince of their argument. Almost in a way, they've convinced the legislators that these people do need controlling in a way. And I think that what they've done, first of all, is illegal. And secondly, it seems fairly silly.
With friends like that, who needs enemies?
Good point.
Okay, so we've talked about piracy online. We've talked about crowdsourced DDoS, in other words, how a comparatively small number of people can create odious mischief if they want to. Is all of that really unimportant when you look at the core of the problem online these days in terms of lost money, lost identities, and, you know, real cyber criminality, namely all the havoc that's wreaked through zombies of people who probably could do a bit more on their home computers to prevent themselves aiding and abetting cyber criminals. Not that I'm saying they do it by design, of course, but just that they, by allowing your PC to be infected by a zombie or a bot, you allow somebody far away to use your computer for malicious ends.
I know that late last year you looked at trying to determine how many zombies there were in Australia. You came up with a rough number, didn't you?
Yes, about my estimate, would that at any time there would be about 80,000.
So if we look at those 80,000 PCs, these mainly home and very small business computers that are zombified, the ISPs quite often know that those computers are zombified, and there is an increasing amount of work that ISPs are doing, advising those home users that their computers may be compromised. What the home users then do to fix that will become more and more important during 2010.
That's, I think, an important point you've mentioned, Rob, because a lot of people that I've spoken to say, why don't the ISPs fix the zombie problem? And in fact, they are doing so by trying to contact some of the worst offenders, you know, the people who send the most spam. But my understanding is it's a really big ask of the ISPs, because the kind of person who's allowing themselves to be zombified to the tune of tens of thousands of spams a day probably isn't reading their email, and that means a phone call, doesn't it?
It does, and that's expensive, about $25 to $30 per phone call that ISPs make to their customers.
And that's not a simple phone call, is it?
Well,
it's not please fix your computer. It's a phone call that may lead to another and another as they try and sort themselves
out.
Well,
the first reaction by a non-technical person would be, if I've got a problem, you should fix it for me. And of course, that's not something that the ISP is empowered both legally and morally to do. So they're providing a conduit, but the hijacked computer actually is the home user's problem. Before we leave this point, just imagine how awkward this is for a mature person leaving a blue-collar job, perhaps getting involved in internet during their retirement, and suddenly the complexity of modern technology, the burden falls directly on them. There really needs to be a ongoing public education for seniors, juniors, and everyone in the middle. As more children join the internet and as more seniors join the internet, I think this becomes a society-wide problem.
So in other words, there is no technological fix.
The technological fix is only as good as the technological fix in motor cars, providing all sorts of new safety benefits. They still need to be driven carefully.
So what you're saying is education, 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 with a bit of technology to make sure that we don't have gratuitous disasters.
And a touch of well-thought-out legislation.
Thanks very much, Rob. Well, folks, there you have it. Until next time, stay secure.